Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, let me grab the headphones. I'll get dialed into the studio. Get these dogs to shut up. Oh, goodness. I better close the window or the neighbors are going to get mad. Hope the guests call in tonight. I wonder if anybody's going to call in. Well, let's do this thing.
It's Rated G Radio, and this is your host, Garrett Miller.
Welcome to your Monday, everybody. I am so thrilled that you are going to be part of the show tonight. We've got author Tom Gehring, who's going to be joining the program in just a minute. He has such an inspired, amazing story to tell, and his book is called, well, you're going to have to get it, and there's a link for it on the show page there, Settle It and Be Blessed. And I hope after hearing Tom tonight, you'll go out and press the button to go to Amazon and buy the book and download it, or buy the hard copy and support the cause, as we say. But without further ado, because Tom's time is valuable, he is an attorney and mediator and a lawyer for over 30 years, let's get Tom on the show. Tom, welcome to the show.
Garrett, great to be here. Thank you so much for having me on. Appreciate it.
I am so excited to have you here as a guest for a lot of reasons. But number one, I love the fact that you are a lawyer who has a very special senior partner. And I want to have you talk about the book, but I'd love to have you talk maybe a little bit about your faith as well and how that shaped your decision to create this fantastic book that you've authored.
Well, let me thank you first for allowing me to talk about my senior partner. You know, it's recently I've gone around the country and spoken at different schools and colleges and whatever, and sometimes I can't talk about my senior partner. I have to hide the fact that I have a senior partner who is, of course, Jesus. So yeah.
And well, I think is such a huge part of your story, and not to be able to share that, I think, is kind of silly for our listeners tonight, because so many of the people that tune in really do have a strong faith. So I love hearing that you'll share that with us.
Yeah, I will. I became a born again Christian 30 years ago in 1984, and I was already if I may be blunt, a hotshot lawyer, and I came to Christ not because of so many people at the Dream Center, for example, where I work, do a lot of work. In other words, I didn't come because I had drugs or problems or anything. If anything, I was flying high. I had a great car and a great career, and tried a lot of cases already, I just felt this calling, and I pulled into a little church in Westwood, and Pastor Henry gave the tiniest little unceremonious altar call, and I stood up and I turned my life over to Jesus, and that was 30 years ago this month.
Happy anniversary.
I know, it's amazing to me. You know, it's the only permanent decision I've ever made. You know, it's like, wow, in under 5 minutes, and it served me well. I'll just put it to you that way.
So how has, because you always hear the crazy stories, which we don't need to go into because everybody hears the jokes, but how has faith shaped your career or guided you throughout the course of the last 30 years?
Well, in 1984, I was already trying some big cases, and I basically, one of the points of the book is I was basically saying, well, sheesh, okay, Jesus, I accepted you as my Lord and Savior, and basically, as a Christian, I really saw my Christianity as just a relationship with Jesus. So, in other words, if I had any problems or any concerns or whatever, I just talked to Jesus about them. And I happened to be in a major trial at the time too. So I'd get up really early at 3 a.m. and I would ask Jesus, in essence, how to help me solve the problems I had with the case. And I was just stunned at, how clear his voice was at 3 a.m., at 4 a.m., at 5 a.m., and I ended up calling that concept the 8-3 rule in my book. In other words, I found that if I did the 8-3 rule on any given week, I could solve just about all the problems of my life. And, in other words, I went to bed at about 8:30 at night and got up at 3 a.m. and talked to him for 3 or 4 hours, and then I went to court, and all I can tell you is I had great days, and I've been doing that now for 30 years. So.
Oh, my gosh. That's awesome. I love hearing that.
Well, it's interesting, Garrett, on that point, just to add one point. One of my heroes is George Washington Carver, who, of course, passed away in 1943. You might recall him yeah, he's the one that found all the uses for peanuts and all of that, and was
sure.
born as obviously as a slave, and was just this remarkable scientist and whatever, and an African American, and just so well known, and did so many incredible things. But he got up at 4 a.m. every morning, and for his problems, his concerns, or how to solve so many problems, scientific and whatever, he talked to God. George Washington Carver, he's a great inspiration to me, and I was reading a little bit about him again last night. So, and when I get to give speeches on occasion, and I get to travel in all kinds of different groups and whatever, I just love to talk a little bit about George Washington Carver and other people that got up that early and, 2, 3, 4 in the morning, how much it changed their life, and the best hours to talk to Jesus. Jesus himself, it says in Mark 1:35, got up early in the morning while it is still dark to, go and pray, et cetera, et cetera. See, I'll just go on and on, and you'll never get
it. No, I love it. But, one of the things that I kind of really resonate when you talk about that, Tom, is the fact that when you're up at that hour of the day, it's so quiet and so still, at least in many places. I think it's a whole lot easier for your mind to, sit there and focus on prayer and things that are important to you, versus, after the kids get up or the dogs start barking or, the garbage truck comes around and you have so many distractions throughout your day, it becomes so much more difficult to find that time to focus.
Well, I promise you it really works, because I've been a trial lawyer now 35 years. I've done thousands of mediations, and I've used the 8-to-3 rule and had clients and friends do it to sort of crack problems in their life, whether it be smoking or, a legal problem or whatever. I'm just convinced that God will talk to you if you make that sacrifice. And I usually suggest a week of time, and it's a sacrifice. You know how it is. If suddenly you're trying to get to bed at 8:30 or 9 and getting up at 3 a.m., are you kidding? You feel the sacrifice. Unless you're me and you're used to it.
I'll tell you, I don't stay up much past 9 o'clock, so I'm there. Now it's just coming, instead of 5 o'clock, turning that into 4. So let's get to your book, though, because that's the real reason you're here tonight, because I have a feeling I could talk to you for hours, so I need to make sure that I stay focused with you here. You've written this book called Settle It and Be Blessed. Can you tell me why you decided to write the book and how you incorporated Genesis 13 into that?
Yeah, in 2009, I felt a real calling to finish this book. In other words, I'd been writing it for about 10 years. And, in those 8-to-3 moments, meaning I just felt the Lord was telling me, just get this book done. And so I did 8-to-3. In other words, I got up at 3 a.m. for, I think roughly about a year, year and a half, and I wrote the book. And Genesis 13... In 1984, when I was born again, I did the classic start from Genesis, first chapter, and read it all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
And I was amazed. Here I was at 30 years old, and Genesis 13, I was shocked, because having tried so many cases and already doing some mediations and stuff, I thought, wow, this is the most incredible paradigm for conflict resolution. In Genesis 13, for your listeners' sake, you got Abraham, the Abraham of the Bible. He's still known as Abram in those days, and he is having a dispute with Lot. And I'll be quick for your listeners so they get the story. But he's got a dispute with his nephew Lot, and their herdsmen are also feuding over the land and things like that. And in Genesis 13, it tells the story of Abram, who is really Abraham, basically. Looked at Lot and said, hey, look at the land in front of us. Look at all this land before us. If you go to the right, I'll go to the left. If you go to the left, I'll go to the right. Choose. And so Lot looked out, and there's a nice verse in there about how he saw the green lands and all this great stuff, and he chose to go to the right. And Abraham said, okay, fine, I'll go to the left. In other words, he resolved the dispute. This is Abraham. This is Uncle Abraham to his nephew Lot. Especially in those days, he could have just looked at Lot and said, hey, I'm the ruler of this family. You go this way or that way. But he gave Lot the first choice. I like how the Bible says Lot chose for himself. Believe me, as a lawyer, when somebody is doing a lot of choosing, pun intended, by the way, a lot of choosing for yourself, you're going to start running into a lot of problems in your life. And what's interesting in the Bible, it's right after that that Abraham gives Lot that first choice and resolves the conflict, that God swoops in and really, really, really blesses Abraham. That's when you know, all those verses we kind of know about, your offspring will be like the grains of sand, you know,
mm-hmm.
and the Lord tells Abraham, you would be blessed forever. So the premise of the book is settle it and be blessed. And now I tell people when I give speeches and whatever, I've now been a witness of this law. I call it a law, meaning that the person that reaches out to settle something, to try and get something resolved, is always the one that's blessed. And, you know, in those days, I put it into practice and it seemed to work, but now 30 years later, I've done it hundreds and hundreds and up to thousands of times, and it's true. How is it possible, Garrett, that all these years later, no one's ever come back to me and say, gee, Tom, I wish I hadn't settled the case?
Right.
It's just, I consider it a law like gravity, and it's God's law, and it's in Genesis 13. It's in the most amazing paradigm for conflict resolution, and it's right there.
Now, there's one thing that, in doing my research on you before the show, you talk about the difference between settling something quickly versus settling something hastily. Can you talk a little bit about the differences between the two?
Yes, and again, as a trial lawyer and a mediator, you see the difference quickly, but when Jesus in Matthew 5 basically settle matters quickly with your adversary on the way to court, you soon learn in the Bible that quickly means soon and without delay, whereas hasty means superficial or fearfully. And so, in essence, no one should ever, in essence, try and do something hasty, let's say, because it always means, in my practice and in reality, it always means superficially or fearfully. And you should never do that. And, you know, as we lawyers, for example, definitely know, you know, what the difference is. And if people don't know the difference, they should pray about it. Don't rush it. Don't be hasty about something. There's wonderful quotes in Proverbs that talk about it's bad to be hasty, in essence, with anything. If you do a word search on hasty throughout the Bible, it's always bad if you're hasty about something. And what's the difference? I think it's easy. And get thrown any facts towards me, and I'm almost sure to know the difference quickly.
Well, and I like that you say that because, you know, I'll think back to just different situations. A lot of times it has to do with email, you know, because I got to get to my email quick. I got to respond quick. And sometimes mm-hmm. I have to sit back and say, I think I'm being hasty in doing that. But until you've actually described it in those terms in that context, never really connected it. Yet there's, you know, being quick and efficient, and there's also doing things that, you know, are a little on the crazy side, and I tend to lean on the crazy. So I force myself to step back every once in a while to do that. So I love the lesson that you're teaching here.
Well, so the lesson is Proverbs 19:2. It's that's the famous proverb that said, it is not good to have zeal without knowledge, nor to be hasty and miss the way. That's the roots, by the way, of haste makes waste. That, you know, sort of what we learn as kids sometimes.
There we go.
That's so 19:2.
When you got the book done, can I ask it like a publishing question instead of, you know, well, I'll get back to like
yes.
the book itself. But did you have a publisher lined up? How was your process after you said, you know what, I am done. I'm really good, and this needs to get out to the world. What happened for you at that point?
Well, it's the shortest version of the story, and I have another book coming out too. The shortest version of the story is, how do I politely say this? I'm proud to be in you know, the latter years of my career. I turned 60 on June 18th.
Oh, congratulations.
And settle it and be blessed. I was working with two or three publishers, and I was going with Thomas Nelson, and then they got bought out by HarperCollins and put my book back a year. And Montserrat Press is where I published it, and that, to be totally honest and blunt, I decided that I wanted to own my book for reasons I'll be happy to tell you, and my brother had a small publishing company in Florida, and we went through his company, and I just didn't realize what a blessing that was. And he turned out, my brother is a publisher mostly of textbooks and things like that around the country, and that turned out to be a big blessing for a ton of reasons. You know, the fact, the main reason, frankly, is I own my book outright, and mm-hmm. I've been able to use it in different capacities for teaching and things like that. And it's actually about to launch in a whole new direction in ways that I couldn't have done it if I'd gone with a publisher. So my next book will pretty much be with Montserrat also. So it's that simple. I'm dealing with Random House now that possibly go with them on my second book. But you know what? If you got the means to kind of do it on your own, frankly, I think it's best.
Well, you know, I talk to a lot of authors, and I'm hearing more and more people tell me the exact same thing. It's like, I want to be able to control my destiny. I don't want to have a book, for example, sell for $20. I get 18 cents of that, and, you know, I have to support this and that and the other thing, and it never really does anything for me. So it's interesting to see, you know, somebody with your experience and background share that part of your publishing career with us here. But
well,
how has the book changed?
Go ahead, Gary.
I was going to say, so how has the book changed your life now that it's out in print and, you know, it's been out for a little bit now?
Well, I get to speak all over the country. I get to speak at universities. I was just up at Pepperdine again. You know what's kind of fun, Garrett, that I really like? I recently was able to speak at the student body of Porter Ranch Middle School. So these are kids 13 and 14 years old. Wow, is that a lot of fun? I've done everything. I've done a lot of radio. I've done a lot of speaking engagements. I've spoken at probably 75 churches in the last couple of years.
Wow.
And I get to speak at my own church more often. I've been invited to write articles and columns, but I've only been able to kind of think about that in the last month or two because I just finished a bunch of big cases, and I'm probably going to have to finally slow down after all this time with the big cases and the big trials and things like that. But, you know, the problem is some of my favorite clients, corporations, and buddies get in trouble, and, you know, I keep
right.
getting – I'm like,
Tom,
the, I'm like
the
Don
rescue.
Corleone. I keep getting called back in.
So a lot's gone on for your life. You
mm-hmm.
get to speak at places, go meet fantastic people. What are people telling you that the book has done for them?
Well, the book has a lot of different major concepts. And so usually when I get an email or a telephone call or something like that, they usually focus on one of the particular areas. And, that you know, it's recently, for example, This really nice lady called me. She found my number, called me, and basically said it was a part of my book that talked about how you can't pursue your passion in the middle of your conflict, and which is a concept I talk about a lot in the book, because when you're a mediator or a trial lawyer, you realize that great people come to you, they got this problem, they put their passions in life on hold, And, you know, of course, I tell them, you know, you can't pursue your passion in the middle of your conflict. You got to get rid of this conflict and get back to your passion. And it really helped this lady settle the problems that she'd been dealing with once she focused on that and realized that. So she focused on that part of the book as far as why she settled her problem. So it's cool when somebody calls and they usually focus on one area of the book, which makes me feel good. I mean, the book has 24 chapters. Each chapter has a takeaway in it. So in one page, you can sort of get the whole points of the book and stuff like that. Sometimes people just, frankly, read the 24 pages, which is fine with me, and one or the other page gets them to settle the matters and the problems in their life. I mean, I want to change the paradigm, Garrett. I want to put more lawyers out of business. I mean, it's ridiculous. My tribe of lawyers make money off people not settling their stuff. And it's just not right. I just want people to start thinking of God's paradigm. And frankly, it's Buddhist principles and other spiritual principles, too, to get this stuff behind them and get on with their life.
So why do you think so many people out there, and, you know, and I probably have been in this situation myself, too, but are so litigious in nature, and it seems like it's really focused, like here in the United States. And I know, like right now, we're being heard in New Zealand, we're being heard in Australia, we're also on the Westar radio network in the United Kingdom. So we have people listening all over, and they hear some of the stories that go on here, and they're like, "What are you people doing? It makes no sense." You know, and we're bombarded with all the lawyer commercials and things that we see on TV all the time. And where do you think this comes from?
Well, you know, spiritually, it's easy to figure out where it comes from. You know, the Bible, I think it's Genesis 9, talks about, frankly, unfortunately, mankind was evil from the beginning. And so, you know, I have several chapters in my book that deal with the problem of evil and the complications of getting people to resolve matters. So where it comes from in the United States, for example, I recently was invited to a wonderful party involving, you know, a national figure who people thought I wouldn't go to for some reason, because I'll just mention his name, Al Sharpton. And of course I wanted to go to it, because I want to go into all kinds of different zones to see if I can somehow be a reconciler in one way or the other. You know, I often say to people, look, don't give me your position on this issue. Give me your reconciliation. Give me your way of resolving this, whether it be immigration, whether it be a gay marriage, whether it be such and such, whether, you know, let's work on reconciliation. I love it when sometimes you get call-ins on radio shows where some person takes one position, the other takes the other position. Even them, I'm always saying, don't give me your position, give me your reconciliation. Look, the bottom line is very simple. A person's position is easy. It's easy for someone to give me their position on something. It's so much harder to give me their reconciliation. And I often say that, if you're not reconciling something, you have to measure your sacrifice. Because all settlements, all resolution comes down to one word, sacrifice. What are you willing to sacrifice?
There you go.
If the issue's not being resolved, measure your sacrifice. When you do a lot of mediations, or when you're in controversial situations trying to resolve issues, you know, measure the sacrifice. And, you know, all these years now of having people present their problems, and I never found a case that I certainly couldn't resolve one way or the other, and I was never felt stumped, so to say. So
can I?
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I can just rattle on. I know that unfortunately, I am a trial lawyer by trade. But I mean, if people are listening from different countries and stuff, I'd say, look, you know, here's the bottom line. We definitely need. I'm not a political person. I'm not a registered Democrat or Republican or anything like that. I try to say that maintain that I am not political. But looking from the outside, we need the type of leadership that looks for reconciliation, that says, look, there's two sides to this. What can we do to bring to do the work to find the middle ground? Myself and other mediators around the country, I mean, they're certainly good at bringing common ground and getting people to resolve their issues. We need that level of leadership, both from the presidency on down, because I think these issues are resolvable, and I wish America would take a greater leadership role. Again, I'm not political. I'm not trying to make a statement about our current president, but I wish I saw stronger efforts for reconciliation as opposed to positions.
Well,
I said to Al Sharpton. Go ahead.
There you go. There are three things that I listened to on different clips of you today, and one of the clips, and I'm going to ask you about all three if you will indulge me. When you think you're right, it might mean you're wrong.
Right. Yeah. You know, well, I'm not sure which clip it is, but yeah, when you get to work closely with people, sometimes when you do, let's say, marital dissolution situations, you see the husband who is always right, or maybe the wife that's always right. You know, if you think you're always right, you're usually plain wrong. I mean, it's not. You know, it's an amazing concept. When you think you're always right or usually right, there's a good chance you're just seriously wrong. Or what's so sad and so bad is that, you know, you might find yourself surrounded by people that have just tuned you out. And so when you do a lot of mediations and you see that somebody shows up with that cocky sort of surly way about them, oh, they know how this is gone and this is this and this is that, wow, it's sometimes a harder situation because they're always right. In other words, it means that they're usually wrong, and in this situation, very wrong. It just basically means you don't listen. And it's tough. It's tough to break through that. And, you know, a really wonderful wife, let's say, will be coy and not really want to take on her husband. And, frankly, usually the guy is very wrong. And the person that you see all the time in these situations, the one that thinks they're right or always right, is usually basically wrong. And there's so much of a lack of humility and respect for the other people around them. And, again, it's the same old thing. It's easy for them to state their position. They state it strongly, and they're wrong. It's that simple.
Their way or the highway. Well, this follows the next question perfectly. How an apology can go a long way. Why is it important to apologize first?
You know, it's interesting because when you go to universities and stuff, there's chapters and books written on apology. And the question I always get is, after that big trial or that big mediation, did everybody apologize? And the answer usually is no, not really. You know, apologies, you know, whether it be, you know, in the spiritual part of the world, the Pope had a chapter on apology in one of his books and stuff like that. In the mediation world, it can really, really, really help. But a lot of times, the resolution is the apology. And so I'm not sure which clip you might have heard that when I talked about apology, but the challenge with apologies in any given situation is sometimes it's nothing more than just one more demand. And there we are again with a problem with reconciliation, because the demand for an apology is sometimes a power move, so to say. So we look for reconciliation all the time. And if in the middle of it, the apology, or the end of it, the apology comes natural and it from the heart, then wow, it sure has a healing side to it. It's wonderful. But it pretty much has to be natural and from the heart, or it's kind
of. And you know, because everybody knows when I go like, Tom, I'm sorry. And I was like, okay, I can see through that one, Cheshire Cat.
Right.
Yeah. And the last one, and this, you must have had my show notes or something, because you're just following like right along. This is perfect. The last question I wanted to ask you about is a quote that I saw. A lesson learned early is a great blessing. Learned late, a great punishment.
Correct. The thing you get to learn with a lot of mediations and trying cases is that a lesson learned early is a great blessing, a lesson learned too late, a great punishment. Now, what that means is that the Bernie Madoffs of the world, let's say, or a lot of people at an early age had great opportunities for a lesson, let's say in their late 20s, mid 30s, or whatever. And if they take the lesson to heart and they grow from it, they realize they made a mistake. Let's say the money came in, they didn't invest it. And they started the corrupt, you know, way, so to say, then it's a great lesson, and it's a great, great blessing. Lessons learned too late in their 50s or 60s, especially as lawyers, you see that all the time, when the person finally got caught or it all came to roost, like the Bernie Madoffs in life. And at that point, it's all punishment. So you want to encourage people with these early lessons to see them as great, great blessings. You know, you made a mistake. That's okay. You know, you see in the mediation world where people have been able to hide these things for decades sometimes, into their 40s, 50s, 60s, maybe even 70s. And when the lesson finally hits, it's all punishment. And there's not a lot you can do. You can start some apologies and you can start some other things, but sometimes you're either in jail or you've lost your family, you've lost your kids, they don't love you. And you get to see that all the time. And so that's why I often say that a lesson learned early, a great blessing, a lesson learned too late, a great punishment, because it can, later in your life, be all punishment. Admittedly, there's other ways to apologize and get your life right with maybe your family or hopefully the Lord. But it can still feel like all punishment.
Absolutely. And so I'm going to ask one more question, but before I do, I've got two people that are pinging in from around the globe. I've got Mary Lou Monroe Ray. She is saying hello from Brisbane, Australia. And I've also got I've got Rick Ashcraft out of Tarpon Springs, Florida, saying hello as well. So they want to send a big shout out to you. So you get people all over. So wrapping up our time together, you are involved in a great organization in Los Angeles called the Dream Center and the Freedom House, and I would love for you to gush a little bit about that before giving out mad props to whoever you would like to give props out to tonight.
Well, the Dream Center, for those that don't know, is in downtown Los Angeles. It's about the Dream Center itself is about 400,000 square feet of ministry space. We have 700 people living on campus. We take people off the street, and they live there for a year or sometimes more. I've been their lawyer for somewhere around 18 years, and the way it played out in my book is I feel like I've worked on mediations and resolving conflicts and all the "its," quote-unquote, in people's lives, all the way from rehab centers and places like the Dream Center, all the way up to some of the biggest trials in the biggest courtrooms in the country. So I've had this wonderful bookends throughout my whole life. And the Dream Center with Pastor Matthew Barnett, Pastor Tommy Barnett, I love them, and I love that they are my pastors, because their idea of forgiveness is just overwhelming. They forgive, and all they think about is serving. It's a Christian ministry. Believe me, you don't have to be Christian. I mean, they just want to help anybody that needs to be fed, that needs a roof over their head, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's a really, really big center. They now have the Emancipated Youth Project, which is, I think, what you mean by Freedom House. And Emancipated Youth is all about the fact that they can be emancipated out of the foster care system at 18 and have nowhere to go. So we have a new place for 18-plus-year-old people to come and stay, and we take care of them. And I know it's been a big, big blessing to me. I mean, my life, since I was born again anyway, I've focused on serving as best I can.
That's awesome. And
I love the Dream Center. It's that simple.
So if you want to find out more about Dream Center, they're at dreamcenter.org, and you can check out all of the great programs that they're providing the folks in Los Angeles. And, Tom, any last words of wisdom before I let you go? I know I'm keeping you a couple minutes past our time, and I want to be respectful of you tonight.
Well, the fight of your life is the fight for your life, and by that I mean, at the end of my book, I say, look, fight for your life, because, in reality, we're supposed to give our life away. In other words, be of service to others, be a blessing to others. And so, if you have a conflict in your life, get it resolved quickly, which means without delay and soon. Get to your passion. Your life does mean something. God does have a plan for you. But ultimately, that plan will involve being of service to our fellow brothers and sisters and being a blessing to others, and that's what it's all about. And then you'll be happy. That's where my peace comes from. That's where my happiness and joy comes from. It's that simple.
There we go. Everybody, it's Tom Gehring. His book, Settle It and Be Blessed, is available on Amazon. The link for it is on the show page tonight. And if you want to hear more about Tom, you can click the link right below that, and it'll take you to Keep the Faith, which is information that has all kinds of really cool stuff and clips and information about Tom and what he's doing. Tom, thank you so very much. It's just a sincere pleasure. I hope to shake your hand one day in person, maybe take you to lunch,
Garrett,
or something like that. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be great. Have a great night.
I'd love to meet you, right, in person. If you're ever in town or I'm traveling through, I'd love to meet you. But thank you for this
opportunity.
I'm
down in Huntington Beach, but I'm up in L.A. all the time, so we'll figure it out. Thank you so much, Tom. Have a great night.
Thank you, Garrett. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Yes.
Everybody else, we're going to be right back. We're going to play this song by Mango Dreamers, who were our recent guest on the Friday Night Dance Party. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Headlines of the Day.
I know there are times when the rain falls hard, washing over the house you've been.
rules that will keep you from living out your dreams. There will always be people who won't understand what you mean, but listen to me.
That is the Little Mango Dreamers, and that's their song, Don't Give Up. They were our guest a week or two ago on the Friday Night Dance Party. Hope to have them back when their second album comes out, and we may end up wrapping up the show with another song. Here's the challenge here. When I have the guests on, everybody starts freaking out because they've never heard this music before, so it's new to everybody who's hearing it, which is awesome. But then everybody's like, I want to hear Don't Give Up, or I want to hear My Paradise, I want to hear Forever, or I want to hear Facebook Lady by William Taylor, who was our guest Friday. So it's always fun because it just starts this outpouring of enthusiasm for the artists that we have on the show. And we're going to continue that tradition this Friday when we have Noble Creatures. We're going to have Luis Nareño, who will be on the show. He's their lead vocalist. We may have other members of the band joining as well. And that'll be for a normal, and it's odd for me to call it the normal Friday night dance party start time, but it's the normal Friday night dance party start time at 7 o'clock. I know in the last few months we've had some changes to the start time just for scheduling issues with artists who are around the country. My big thing is if, you know, we've got somebody who's agreed to be on the show and they've got a gig, the gig puts money in their pocket. This show does not. So if we can figure out how to make accommodations to still have them be a guest on the show, that's always something I will try to do. So Friday, it's Noble Creatures will be playing their album in the first hour, and then in hour two, it's an all-request special, you know, like usual. I say special, like usual, the usual special. But it's going to be listener requests in hour two. Don't forget that on Friday nights, we are broadcasting also live on the Chat and Spin Radio Network in the UK, as well as West Star Radio Network in the UK, and we may have some other announcements coming up fairly shortly for new broadcast partners for Rated G Radio around the world. So that is really, really cool to be able to share with you. For everybody who's friends with me on Facebook, Saturday night was an interesting night for a lot of you because Saturday night you started getting these weird requests from me. Now, keeping in mind I don't smoke or drink or do anything weird like that, I sit here with my glass of lemon water like I do tonight during the show, and I have this opportunity to have some visibility with a major national network. And one of the requirements was that I needed to have X number of people follow me on this different platform, not Blog Talk Radio, but one that this other company tracks, and it's called Spreaker, like speaker except with an R thrown in. And I said, you need to get to X number of followers on your show. And, you know, so everything else about their requirements to get a review was already met, except for this, okay, you have to join Spreaker and then get X number of people to follow you. So I went, okay, so I sent out some email blasts, I think, on Friday, and Saturday night, you know, here's, I'm going to back this story up just a second. Here's my problem. It gets dark here now at 4:30 or 5 o'clock, and I am like one of those, I don't want to call them the dragon snappers or something like that, where, you know, they close up at night, or a flower that closes up at night and then blooms as soon as the sun hits it in the morning. That's me. So, like, you know, at 5:30, 6 o'clock, I'm looking at my computer thinking it must be like midnight because it is so pitch black out. And I look at the clock on the computer and it's 6:20. And so I do some other things, and then I come back, and it's like 6:23. I've, you know, done my laundry and all this. And anyhow, so I sat down at the computer, and I'm going through the list of requirements that I need to get filled up. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to start asking people for favors. Now, I am the last person, if you know me at all, I never ask anybody for anything. Don't ask for a cup of coffee. I don't ask for, you know, a dollar. I don't ask for a ride to the bus station. I don't ask for anything. I should just get over that. My friend Carol Lee keeps saying, you need to be open. You need to be available to have people, you know, help you or give you things. And I'm like, that's just not me. It's not my character. So I sat down on Saturday night and said, I think I'm going to test this. I'm going to make the ask. And so I'd sent out the email blast, but I actually started going and finding my friends on Facebook who were online. And I said, I'm asking you for a favor. Will you help me? Now, here's the interesting thing, though. It's a real testament to, I think, to, you know, who I have for friends on the Book of the Face, and I'm grateful to all of you. So if, as you're listening tonight, I need you to know I appreciate what you've done for me. But without telling them what the favor was, I just said, I need a favor. Can you help me? And I sent that off. Now, you know, at the beginning, that sounds great, but as I started, you know, typing these out, because I didn't figure out how to cut and paste this until later, it's like, why don't you cut and paste it to make it a whole lot faster? At that point, I was like, I'm not asking for money. Can you do me a favor? It's super simple and involves a couple of clicks. That started getting people responding faster. But the majority of the people that I was pinging immediately said, yes, anything. What do you need? I'd be glad to help you. And it really kind of caught me off guard a little bit, because as much as I try to be as willing and able to help people as I possibly can, if you need me to go like your page or give you a plug on the radio like we're going to be doing tonight for Mary Lou's event in Brisbane, Australia, it's the Evolved Psychic and Holistic Expo this Sunday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. People from Brisbane, the Sunshine Coast, and the Gold Coast will be there. There's free entry into the Captain's Room. It's going to be held at the Brisbane Broncos League Club in Fulcher Road in Red Hill. So there you go. So if you have an event like that, I'd love to talk about it. But I'm going to be probably the last person to go out and ask for favors. So I started asking, and I said, and the response was always, yes, 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 yes. And it really kind of emotionally caught me off guard, because that was not what I was expecting. And 100% of the people that I asked said, absolutely, I'll do this. And all I needed them to do, and if you want to do it, if you haven't done it yet, is follow me on Spreaker. You can go find out how to do that, I think, on my Facebook page. And it's just super easy. You click a couple of things, and then magically you're following me. What it does is it shows that I have the audience that I've already built in here at Blog Talk, but it shows that I have this on their other platforms. So anyway, for everybody who was kind enough to indulge me on Saturday or even on Sunday, I just want to tell you from the bottom of my heart, I sincerely thank you. And hopefully I'll have some more news on that one as well. On to other people I can be excited for and about. Mr. C.G. Reich, he's been a musical guest on Rated G Radio as well. He plays kind of like this enigma. I don't want to call it new agey, because that's not really the right word, but he plays a lot of flutes and has these great drums, and he plays these synthesizers. And if you get a chance to see the man in person, he is like this force of nature. That's the only way to describe it. One of the most humble, nicest men that you'll ever get a chance to meet. I've met his family. His kids are great. His wife is fantastic. And then, you know, you have this humble man, C.G. Reich. Well, then, you know, you turn the spotlight on, or his music, you know, he gets ready to start doing the music, and boom, it creates this great big show. And he's a showman, folks, and it is absolutely one of these things that if you've seen a big, big time show in Las Vegas or something like that, this would be the equivalent of that. It's a one-man gig. You know, if you get him on stage with, you know, the guitar players and the singers and everything else, it is something that, unless you see it in person, I'm just babbling and rambling on. But you should check him out. C.G. Reich. His last name is spelled R-Y-C-H-E. Now, if you want to see a quick promo of what's going to be happening to him, April 25th at the Inn of the Mountain Gods Resort and Casino. It's somewhere in New Mexico. I think it's like Santa Fe. He's going to be putting on this huge spectacular. And he's got this great 15-second promotional video, and it's on my Facebook page right now. Now, there might be a special guest voiceover artist talking about the event. That could be me. So if you want to go see the promo and then hear me kind of do my WrestleMania scripting, you can go listen to that tonight. And it was funny because I did I did a couple of takes, and I sent it over to him, and I said, you know, I'm kind of worried because I'm thinking I sound a little WrestleMania-ish, and I'm not sure if that's really what you want, but, you know, here you go. And he goes, more WrestleMania, absolutely. So I redid it, and so hopefully that's something that will come across that you will get a kick out of and hopefully a little smile. And if you're in New Mexico around the April 25th time frame, you must go see his show. Now, he also posts, if you are in Southern California, you should friend him or like his Facebook fan page, C.G. Reich, C.G.R.Y.C.H.E. So if you're looking around and just scoping your computer, like his Facebook fan page. He'll post where he's performing, and he's usually at, like, Downtown Disney here in Anaheim, or he's up at Universal Walk, I think is what they call it, in Universal Studios up in Hollywood. And, you know, it's a place to go see live music, you know, in the outdoor setting, and it is super, super cool. And, of course, I always say support the cause, just like Tom Gehring on the show tonight for his book, Settle It and Be Blessed. Press the link to go to Amazon, go buy his book, support the cause. Always appreciate people doing that. But when we have musical guests like CG and you're at Downtown Disney or Universal Walk, buy one of the CDs. That's honestly how all of these people make their money when they're outperforming like that, because these places, you know, charge like a rental fee or for, you know, for them to go be at the space, and then they've, you know, they've spent their time and money and gas and blood, sweat, and tears getting things set up and, you know, performing for you for free. So if you have a chance to actually buy one of their CDs, I highly encourage you to do that, because it is one of those things that makes their world a little nicer. So please do that. Sunday night, last night, I had the great fortune to go see TMI Hollywood. Now, I've talked about it before, but it's been a hot minute since I've shared that with you. But TMI Hollywood, you've seen the news show in the afternoon, at least it's the afternoon here in Los Angeles. It's called TMZ with Harvey Levin, and they talk about all the dumb things celebrities do. Well, there is this great sketch comedy group that's held up at Second City in Hollywood. It's on Hollywood. It's near Hollywood and Vine. And you go up this set of stairs, and then there's a studio and a green room and some other things like that, and you witness some of the most brilliant sketch comedy you are ever going to see for $10. So my friend John Barra is the producer of the show. John is in, I think, a 6- or 7-time Emmy-winning producer for television, and he produces not only the TMI Hollywood, but he also produces Let's Make a Deal with Wayne Brady. So if you're ever wanting to come to see Let's Make a Deal in Hollywood, let me know, and I'll see if they're, number one, if they're filming, and I can see if I can get you some VIP tickets. But that's just me talking off the cuff. I haven't asked John about that, but he's always looking for people to go to the tapings. But TMI Hollywood, they had their 100th episode last night, and it's a live sketch comedy show that goes for about an hour, sometimes an hour and a half, just depending upon the show and content. And every week they have a different guest star coming in to be the Harvey Levin person. So the concept is that at the beginning of the show, this guest star, in this case it was Glee's Dot Marie Jones. You'll remember her from Glee and tons of other things. She was there, and she plays the role of Harvey. So you know, the actors and the sketch artists are all, you know, mulling around kind of like they do in the studio for TMZ, and then Dot says, okay, so what stories have you guys got? And so then they talk about the different stories that have happened during the course of the week. And what I find so unique about this is, unlike watching like a Saturday Night Live, where on a 90-minute Saturday Night Live episode, you might go, oh, we've got 14 minutes that were actually almost funny or almost interesting tonight. You know, because some of them just really fall flat, and then they usually have a musical guest that nobody wants to hear. And, you know, then after the weekend update, you know, it's all the leftover skits. That's what I call them, because they're usually not funny, and they just make you go, ugh, can I fast forward through this just a little bit faster? And if I could, I would. With TMI, you've got that, let's just say, an hour show. So instead of having 14 minutes of, okay, that was amusing, you usually get like 50 to 55 minutes of, that was darned funny. And there were a couple of skits last night that were so over-the-top hysterically written and performed by the just by the actors that were there. It was one of those moments I almost wish I had worn Depends, because I could have almost peed my pants. That's how funny they are. So on Facebook as well last night, I went to their after party, and there's a single picture, I think, that's still up there of John Barra, of course. We also have Julian Clark. He's one of the directors, Peter Aiello, and Timothy McGeary. And so they're all like the big folks for TMI Hollywood. So if you get a chance to go do that up in Hollywood, let me know some Sunday night. I'll drive up there. And I don't go every week. I try to go every once in a while. It's usually when John sends me a note and says, "What are you doing tonight? You need to get up here and see this. We're going to have a great show." It's like, oh, what I got to do? So I always say, if I can do that, I will. Other things happening. I know Gail Carline is listening tonight. She's been a recent guest to the show. Gail was at I think they call it like Boucheron or something like that. I'm screwed up every single time, so I'm just going to call it the Long Beach, California Writers Conference. She was down here from Placentia. She was down, even though that's local, you know, still a hike. She's down in Long Beach over the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and I had a great opportunity to not only meet Gail, but several of her friends, and I had pictures with the various authors on Facebook, I think on Friday. I'm not sure if they're still there now. But just talk about a meeting of the minds where you have so many different people with different creative abilities and genres that they love to write about. And I sat down with the ladies, and this really would have made a good interview, but of course I wasn't prepared with my microphone or anything like that. But these ladies were talking about challenges they have in this industry of publishing and writing, and they're all great writers. So it's not like, you know, they're slouchy writers who write, you know, garbage books that nobody wants to buy. These are great books by great writers. And talking about, well, you know, I think the music industry is like 10 years ahead of us from a technology standpoint because of how they sell music on iTunes, and they're innovating and they're doing, you know, doing things this way or that way. And, you know, the people in the publishing industry are, you know, just really behind the eight ball, and nobody, you know, really buys a lot of books anymore, but we still have to buy the books, or you still have to go to print with them. And, you know, should I self-publish? Should I not self-publish? I could have stayed there all day long. So to Gail and all of her friends we had a chance to visit with, thank you very much for that. We're about ready to wrap up the show tomorrow night. I'll give you a heads up. We have Tarot Tuesday, so Tarot Jeff will be back on the show giving you your free five-minute reading and a three-card draw. Wednesday and Thursday, I may have headline nights, which will be kind of surprising. I haven't done those in ages. We had somebody back out on Thursday who was going to come in and talk about food, which is really, I met this lady at the Huntington Beach Farmers Market down by the beach, probably like last month, and bought, I think, every single thing that she had there to sell because it was just so delicious and yummy. And I said, I need to have you come on the show or somebody from your company come on the show and talk about this. And Sola Foods, I'm still going to plug them because I love their food. Sola, S-O-L-A, you can find them on Facebook. And she emailed back and says, you know, we haven't gotten any recipes for, you know, to, you know, share over this. So I think I need to pass her now. I think she just might have been a little nervous, and that's okay. So we'll probably be doing headlines on Wednesday and Thursday. Unless you are fantastic and awesome and want to call in and chat about whatever it is you would like to chat about, we can do that too. But that will be fun. So tomorrow's Tarot Tuesday with Jeff. Again, everybody who's listened to the show tonight, go buy Tom's book. I think it is one of those life lessons that you will learn a lot from. 24 chapters, Settle It and Be Blessed is his book, and I think you will enjoy that a great deal. I'm out of breath. I'm out of time. We're going to play a little Mango Dreamers. Again, this is from their appearance a couple weeks ago called My Paradise. I will see you live on Tuesday night. Be blessed tonight, everybody. I think that's a great thing to be, and don't drive distracted. We'll see you Tuesday. Thank you.
You've been listening to
Rated G Radio.